Welcome everybody to another edition of the Damage Report. It is Wednesday, and thus also JR Wednesday. Hey JR, how's it going?
You know, it's a shame. I wish I could come on a day when there was something to talk about. Maybe something controversial, maybe something that isn't always in the news. But we're probably gonna talk about some just low level, under the radar, fun, happy stories.
Yeah, yeah, no. So look, obviously JR is joking around. He's referring to the release of the UN report on the heating of our oceans. And that is the big news. We are gonna be talking about that to close out the show. We've also got AOC debut. Reviewing her six-part anti-poverty plan, six different pieces of legislation. We're going to be giving an idea of what's in those. We didn't actually get on yesterday's program to a Joe Biden-linked firm that's attempting to figure out how to undermine public interest in Medicare for All. So we're going to have that a little bit later on when Ryan Grimm joins us on the show. So that should be fun. But
which foreign leader did Trump talk to about Biden and is undermining Medicare for All?
That's Cameroon, actually. And so we've got details on that. But enough jokes. Why don't we jump into it? Yesterday, impeachment begins. Today, the White House has put out a couple of important statements that we're going to break down. The first and the most official, really, was this: presidential harassment. That is, I checked. He has used the term presidential harassment many times on Twitter, and four separate instances, the entirety of the tweet has been all caps presidential harassment exclamation point. I don't think you can do that four times without us having serious concerns about you. But obviously, much more importantly than the presidential harassment is the release of the transcript. And if you are listening to this purely in audio, I'm using air quotes because it is not a transcript. It is a summary, a sort of recollection and reconstruction of conversations that was made clear when you actually look at it. So we're gonna zoom in on some different parts of this transcript. The first is going to be that cautionary note that I just alluded to. Let's take a look at that. You can see there, a memorandum of a telephone conversation is not a verbatim transcript of a discussion. The text records the notes and recollections of different people there. A number of factors can affect the accuracy of the record, including poor telecommunications connections and variations in accent. Also using ellipses to purposefully remove sections, which was also done in a number of different places, which we'll get into. Before we get into the specifics though, I did a short little live video about this. JR, we were told that this coming out would be, look, the Democrats are gonna look ridiculous because this is gonna exonerate the president. What do you think?
Well, I mean, as we've seen some of the Democratic officials, presidential candidates, senators, congresspeople saying this is one of those things Elizabeth Warren specifically said, it's a smoking gun. So when you start seeing the different results or consequences or whatever people's takes are from seeing this, it's usually gonna go along political lines. We're gonna see how it's gonna work that way anyway. And you wonder, what is it that they're looking to do? Because as I was looking at also, even just, I'm glad you point out how it's a memo, and I guess what, TELCON is the official acronym for it. Mm-hmm. In many media outlets, it's calling it the official transcript. Yeah. Transcript, transcript.
It's not a transcript.
That's not what it is. And even when they said they're gonna release it, because this is why it's important for the president and his administration to have a background of honesty. Because as soon as they say, oh, yeah, sure, we're gonna release it, the first thing I thought was, well, there's gonna be something off or biased or exclusionary about this release. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And even with all that, it's still damning.
Yeah.
It's still exactly what you don't wanna see your president doing.
So that yeah, so many ridiculous things all at once. One, it's not a transcript in the way it's being referred to as a transcript. This is not literally what was said in all cases, in a way that we can trust. Even if it was a transcript, we shouldn't trust it, because as I tweeted out, four different examples from Trump's first term where the White House has manipulated transcripts. So you have the video of what was actually said, and then you have the transcript, and they're different. So that was a reason to be worried about this. That is probably in this, and there are sections that are left out, but I was wrong to doubt that this would be damaging because they'd clean it up. They cleaned it up, but it's still incredibly damaging. So let's walk through the worst section. And this is really, really bad. It is what we initially suspected this story was about. It is what Donald Trump has since admitted to in public, and Rudy Giuliani has largely admitted to. And now this summary transcript telecon thing confirms it as well. So the call starts. Trump, there's a little bit like congratulations because the Ukrainian president Zelensky had just been brought in. Hold on, right before we get to that, what they'd been talking about was Trump does this long paragraph about how the US has been very good to Ukraine and other countries haven't. He goes on this rant about how Angela Merkel's terrible and she sucks, she's the worst. But the US has been good. So then Zelensky starts talking and says, oh yeah, you're amazing, you're the best, you have the best hair and all that. He didn't actually say that. And then we get to the important section. So let's read this. This is we want to show you literally what it looks like. So this is from one page to the next. This is President Zelensky. I would also like to thank you for your great support in the area of defense. We are ready to continue to operate for the next steps. Specifically, we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes. Those are anti-tank missiles. Right. Trump says, I would like you to do us a favor though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server, they say Ukraine has it. So there's two sections there that have ellipses. Things are being deliberately left out there. But what is not left out is bad enough. What he's talking about there is the right-wing conspiracy theory having to do with a server that's been hidden abroad. And it has to do with Hillary Clinton. So years after she has vanished off into the woods on her hike, he is bringing up with a newly sworn in president of Ukraine that they have to do a favor for us if they want these anti-tank missiles, and that is investigating this server. Now that is not literally a quid pro quo. As I tweeted earlier, he doesn't say, I'll give you the stuff, but first you have to do the crimes for me. No, he doesn't say that specifically, but he responds to a thing about buying military hardware with, I would like you to do us a favor though.
This is how a lot of times racists also react when they said, oh, they didn't say the N-word. They didn't explicitly call Jews any kind of filthy expletive. So that doesn't mean they can't be anti-Semitic. That doesn't mean they can't be racist, because they can continue this cover of, well, he didn't say the word quid pro quo.
Because he doesn't know what it means.
So just because that didn't happen doesn't mean that. Now, the term, as you point out, when he said the new president of Ukraine said, we're going to buy those javelins from you. And he said, I need you to do me a favor, though.
Yeah.
What does though mean? What does though mean? Why though? Do me a favor, though, before you do those things, like we're going to continue to have this friendly exchange of money and weapons, I need you to do this for me, though. Mm-hmm. Though means with some kind of stipulation. Do this for me, though, with my political opponent. Why is that not seen as the explicit pants on fire lie that he's been talking about?
People understand that. The right wing is trying to cloud the issue because they know how bad it looks. They know that this is terrible, this is illegal. So they're trying to cloud the issue, but rational people can see exactly what is going on there. This is dialogue from an episode of The Sopranos. That's all it is. We actually have sort of an allusion to that later on. Quick note, by him bringing up the CrowdStrike thing, that theory, that says that as of a few months ago, he still doesn't believe that Russia was responsible for the hacking of the DNC, that's how that email's got. That's what this theory is that secretly there's this other thing that explains it. So this is, by the way, after the Mueller report comes out, this is after Mueller's testimony, this is after all of this, he still believes this whack job theory of what actually happened.
Wait,
doesn't believe our intelligence.
This doesn't have to do with 2016, because I thought that the Democrats are really getting it, relitigating 2016
exactly
in this situation.
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is terrible, obviously, but you might say, well, we haven't heard anything about Biden yet. Well, they get into it. And so this is the same paragraph I'm going to read you. So we need your anti-tank missiles. I need you to do us a favor though. And to give you an idea if this is a favor for the country or favor for Trump, he's already said, I want you to pursue this grudge I have against Hillary Clinton, this conspiracy theory from 3 years ago. So there's that. But he goes on and says, there were a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like you to have the Attorney General call you or your people, and I would like for you to get to the bottom of it. As you saw yesterday, that whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance, but they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible. Immediate response to that. By the president, yes, it is very important for me, and everything that you just mentioned earlier, for me as a president is very important, and we are open for any future cooperation. We are ready to open a new page on cooperation and relations between the United States and Ukraine. So what you have is Trump says, we're really good to you, we give you money, nobody else does, you can only count on us. The Ukrainian president says, we want to buy anti-tank missiles. Trump says, I need a favor though. And the Ukrainian president says, I understand and I want us to have a partnership.
Now,
I don't know what else is supposed to be there.
And now, when you have $400 million that's withheld in aid that the United States gives to Ukraine, which also, again, Ukraine is desperate about wanting to get into the coalition of the Western powers and all that stuff. And we know Ukraine's connection with Russia and how Putin doesn't want any kind of independence or detachment from their point of view, especially when it comes to things like this. So, with all that surrounding it, and also the which we've all seen, and honest people will admit, there's been a lot of conversations between Putin and Trump about who knows what. And we know Putin has this love for Trump. Trump has this love for Putin. So with all that pressure, the new president of Ukraine would be sitting back going, I really want to do what's best for my country right now. So whoever it is that's in power that's threatening me, not explicitly, but telling me, hey, $400 million withheld, we need this from you. You're desperate to get some kind of level of detachment from your country. So how about you hook us up with this and we'll make that happen? Yes, I'm extrapolating and I'm putting the whole puzzle together in a way. But that's what was happening.
Yeah.
So if I'm on that phone call, I'm putting it together still. I'm going, man, what's he telling me? In a way, what should I do to make sure this comes out well? It's a 30-minute phone call, by the way.
Yeah, that summarized in 5 pages to give you an idea of how much is being left out. And the president totally understands who he's dealing with. He understands how corrupt Donald Trump is, because in other sections of the transcript, he refers to how he is trying to drain the swamp in Ukraine and how Trump has been a great teacher in that area. And he also says that when he visited the United States earlier, before he was president, he makes a point of saying that he stayed at Trump Tower. So just to give an idea of his understanding of how corrupt these dealings are going to be.
Last thing. And keep in mind, even when Trump was running in 2015, there was known approaches that foreign leaders had with talking to Donald Trump. It's kiss his butt, make sure he thinks you like him, make sure he thinks you like him, and then say glowing things about him, and he'll do whatever you want.
Exactly.
So you just go along with what he's saying, because that's what's beneficial for you.
Yeah, no, I said that it would get into Biden. Here's that. This is Trump. The other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution. So if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. So again, favors. Oh, by the way, we know this. I just want to make sure that you remember that this isn't just they ask for aid and he says, I need a favor. What's lurking in the background of this call is, as you'll recall, a week earlier, new foreign aid had been allocated, hundreds of millions of dollars by the legislature, which is their legal right and responsibility to do. And Donald Trump said that it should be stopped and it was cut off. So a few days go by, then he calls the guy with that specter lurking in the background that we have put a hold on your aid. So maybe just bear that in mind as I ask you for a couple of the personal favors that I'm looking for. As Alex Koch had tweeted, we'll show you just briefly, there are those ellipses that have been cut out. And references, by the way. So there's both the ellipses, that's explicitly something has been removed. And then there's things in the transcript that are references by Zelensky to things that aren't in the transcript or the summary. So clearly something was taken out that Zelensky is later referring to, but we don't know what it is because it's not there. Let's see.
How's that possible? This is the official transcript, John.
Yeah, exactly, you would think so. Look, if we bring this section up, and look, you should totally look over it. It's only 5 pages, won't take you very long. But we bring up this next section, it's this long thing about how they should work with the AG, which is our lawyer, but Trump considers him his personal lawyer, and Rudy Giuliani, who is literally his personal lawyer. We're gonna talk about that more later. He's not a government employee, he is not a diplomat. He is the personal lawyer of Donald Trump. And on this phone call, he's saying, I want you to work with my personal lawyer. So to get an idea of whether this is a national favor or personal favor, it involves his personal lawyer. And look, some people have been, there's been some great analogies, I forget who it was, but it was something to the effect of, this is like the corrupt goals of House of Cards with the political acumen of Veep. Like, it's laughable that they thought that this would exonerate him. This is everything. It's not everything that we're gonna find out, because it's gonna be the whistleblower, and the whistleblower has referred to things other than just this phone call. And there's sections that are left out of the phone call that we might or might not ever find out about. But this is everything that was alleged against him that they'd already admitted to, and now it's in the thing they released to defend themselves.
So all that's left is whether or not the American people will see what's right in front of their face versus what this administration is telling them to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of really irresponsible, corrupt people that are trying to cloud the issue to protect the president.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, we are going to take a short break. We come back, Ryan Grimm's going to be joining us. We're going to talk about Nancy Pelosi, her strategy, and Joe Biden on healthcare after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
As of yesterday, Nancy Pelosi announced that some sort of impeachment inquiry would be put into effect. That is not what I personally had expected. I think that few expected her to actually move on this. She'd been so opposed to it in the past. So how exactly did we get to this point? And certainly, how did we get there as quickly as we did? Joining us now to help break it down is Washington Bureau Chief at The Intercept and TYT contributor, Ryan Grimm. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Great to have you here. And you recently wrote up an article for The Intercept talking about this path to where Pelosi ended up yesterday. So what do we need to know to understand this?
I mean, the short answer is that primary challenges in a significant way drove the caucus toward this kind of revelation. I mean, it also involved the perfect timing of this Ukraine story, but the caucus was very much poised to explode because of the tensions that were building in it because of all these primary challenges. So Sherry Bustos, chair of the DCCC, recently told the Democratic caucus that there are now more than 110 primary challenges being run around the country of various seriousness. If you look at a typical cycle of just a couple years ago, there might be two or three challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, to have more than 100 is wild. And the people that don't have challenges did not necessarily feel safe. You know, there could be people waiting in the wings who are still going to jump in because there's still plenty of time between now and the primaries. And people were in the very beginning of Congress, people were blaming the squad for anything bad that happened to them back at home or any threat to their seat. They're like, "Oh, this must be Ocasio-Cortez. You know, this is the movement she's started is now going to try to swallow me up." But what they started to realize is that actually it was more of the kind of like the indivisible crowds, the people who got involved in the Women's March and who went door knocking and text banking for the people who were running to flip these like red to blue seats. They were getting really furious at Democrats for their passivity. Like, mm-hmm. what did we do for the last 2 years. Like, why did we put all of this unpaid effort going door to door to give you guys the majority of the House of Representatives so you could sit there and do nothing and let this guy continue to be lawless? And that is what led to a ton of primary challenges around the country. So people were getting fed up. Like, what's the point of all this? Why are we now getting challenged just to protect a couple of loud frontline Democrats who are too afraid to impeach Trump?
Yeah, no election is about just one thing, but 2018, it really felt like let us take control of the House and we will hold Trump accountable. And I mean, there had been nothing on impeachment up until this week. We're no closer to tax returns. That was one of the sort of promises that they made. So I can understand that frustration. What I want to know from your point of view, though, is there's a lot of different ways to attempt to impeach Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. This is not, you know, a vote next Tuesday. This isn't the Judiciary Committee. This isn't a Select Committee. The way that she did it, this distributed approach, does that to you signal that she is serious about this? Is this a delaying tactic? What do you think?
I think that she is trying to kind of leave open a lot of different possibilities. She clearly is not deeply invested in this process. You know, she's been a vocal opponent of it until yesterday. So it's not like she's been a full convert to now zealously in charge of an impeachment process. I think that she's still working out with her caucus, like, and with the various chairmen, you know, who's gonna take the lead on this, whether it's gonna be a select committee, whether it's gonna go through the regular committees that are set up. She and Jerry Nadler, who's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, have been at odds for months over this. So there's bad blood there. So even though the Judiciary Committee would be the logical place for this to go, it might not, because she's ticked at him and he's ticked at her. So I don't think that she's fully on board for it. But what yesterday showed, and what the organizing over the last week in particular showed, is that in a lot of ways it doesn't necessarily matter what she wants to do in her heart of hearts. She's going to do what she's forced to do by activists and by her caucus that is being driven by kind of grassroots activists. And also, it depends on how the events unfold. You know, this morning, Trump puts out this transcript and says, "See, look, I'm exonerated. All it says is that I asked him for a favor. I didn't ask him for a quid pro quo." And people are like, "What's wrong with you? why are you giving us this evidence of your crimes?
Yeah.
You committed so many crimes, you don't even know like how obvious it is that this is evidence of basically a crime." As things move against Trump, then she's gonna probably get more excited about it. The more she feels like she's getting political advantage, then she'll move into it further.
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on one other topic, though, out in the news. As much as I want to stay on the impeachment because it's such big news, in the Democratic primary, you've got in the top three positions, depending on the poll, you got Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. And when you compare either Biden versus Sanders, Biden versus Warren, one of the biggest out in front policy difference is what they want to do in terms of healthcare. And the news just a couple of days ago that a Biden-linked firm had been testing talking points to undermine support for Medicare for All, for someone like me who supports it, that's not what I want to see. So I'm curious about that. Do you think that strategically this is a good point of differentiation for Joe Biden? Is this how he brings his numbers back up since they've been sort of slowly dropping over the last week or two?
So Biden, I guess, is savvy enough to know that the only thing besides that Obama says nice things about him that he has going for him is that for a long time he was perceived as the most electable candidate. Now, the Democrats would say, well, all they want to do is beat Trump in the next election, so therefore they're going to elect the guy, nominate the guy who's most likely to be able to beat Trump. Now, the problem for him is that as he fades, his kind of sheen of electability fades with it. You know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling and a self-defeating prophecy, depending on the direction that your campaign is going. So if he no longer has that sheen of pure electability behind him because he's losing to Elizabeth Warren in the latest poll, for instance, then he has to try to say that his opponents are actually unelectable. And there is an entire class, consulting class of Democrats who believe that Medicare for All is a disaster in a general election, because they'll just run all these campaigns about how you're going to get kicked off your private insurance and you're going to be waiting in line in some Soviet hospital or whatever. So there is a consulting class that believes deeply that Medicare for All can be turned into an electability issue. And so that's what he seems to be trying to do, to say that, like, look, people don't want this Medicare for All. And if you nominate somebody who supports abolishing private health insurance, they will lose. We don't want to lose. It's too important. So go for me. That seems to be what's behind at least the strategy of that. Of course, people like Third Way that are funded by, you know, the health industry very much oppose Medicare for All as a policy.
Yeah, and look, I mean, in the last debate, we certainly saw some of these talking points being trotted out in what seems to me a far more aggressive fashion than they had been earlier in the campaign. Mm-hmm. And I know that just a couple days ago in Iowa, Biden said of Elizabeth Warren that she wants to raise Americans' taxes. Of course, the same exact talking point I'd expect if Jake Tapper was asking a question in a debate, ignoring overall cost and focusing on taxes. That was Biden's attack against her.
Right. So, you know, Biden doesn't have an affirmative agenda. You know, you can dig through everything that he's unveiled throughout his entire campaign, and there's nothing there. So it's all about going back to what things were like before, defending the gains that were made under Obama, and very modestly and carefully building on those gains. And so that's not much of an affirmative agenda. So he has to, try to trash or scare people away from what Warren and Sanders are running on, and the media loves it. Like, it's kind of, in some ways it's nice that the media is so passionate about covering Medicare for All or talking about it in these debates finally. But on the other hand, you're like, really, we're gonna spend 45 minutes talking about the existence of private insurance in a Medicare for All scheme that actually, like, nobody thinks Medicare for All, as Sanders has written it and Warren has co-sponsored it, is just going to sail through the Senate and the House of Representatives. Like, there's gonna be some role for private insurers in whatever comes out of Congress, if Democrats are lucky enough to take Congress back. And so they're sort of debating this on a theoretical frame. And I think partly it's because the media thinks that it really does damage the left, because they read the same polling that Third Way reads. So great, I'm glad they're talking so much about Medicare for All and private insurance, but they're doing it at the expense of climate change and a lot of other issues. And they're just constantly, you know, like you said, trotting out these Republican talking points about raising taxes.
Yeah. I mean, mentioning climate change, we're gonna be closing the show talking about the new UN report on the oceans, and that could not have come out on a worse news day if it was gonna get covered. It wasn't gonna get covered anyway, but especially now. Ryan Grimm, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here.
We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, the right's reaction to the transcript being released after this. As bad as this entire Ukraine thing, everything that we've heard, everything that we saw in the transcript so far today, as bad as that looks for Donald Trump, it also looks bad for another person, and that is Rudy Giuliani, someone who is, he's no stranger to looking bad in things. And that was on display yesterday. He was attempting to explain on the friendliest of outlets for him, I believe it was Laura Ingraham, why exactly he did what he did. He tried to explain. Let's see him try.
Man, I really did. And you know who I did it at the request of? The State Department. I never talked to a Ukrainian official until the State Department called me and asked me to do it. And then I reported every conversation back to them. And Laura, I'm a pretty good lawyer, just a country lawyer, but it's all here, right here. The first call from the State Department.
I don't know what any of that means. So apparently, man, the explanation changes so fast. The State Department was having an issue investigating Ukrainian corruption, and so they turned to lifelong diplomat and coincidentally personal lawyer to the president, Rudy Giuliani, to dispatch him. It wasn't Trump who brought it up on the phone call. We saw that. It was the State Department. So this is what, Rudy Giuliani confused? Rudy Giuliani throwing the State Department under the bus?
I'm not sure how he thinks. Again, I always wonder, how do they think this is a good answer to the question? This is worse, bro. So you're going to keep saying, hey, you know, so it wasn't me working, which probably was in this interview or previous ones and in the next one after that. I'm the personal attorney to President Donald
Trump. He's
going to
get into it in the next video, actually.
I'm here to defend him.
Yeah,
he says,
that.
Open. Sorry.
Yeah.
But if you say right before the State Department dispatched me to do this because somehow the State Department can't work without you, but then you're doing it to defend Donald Trump, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look good for you. I don't like to state that things are facts that I can't prove directly, but I have a pretty good feeling that two things are true. One is Trump doesn't care about corruption in Ukraine, doesn't care about it in the White House. He certainly doesn't care about it in whatever house they have in Ukraine. And two, the State Department does not rely on Rudy Giuliani to solve its international diplomatic problems. I just don't think that those are true. And so you have to have a follow-up question, which somehow Laura Ingraham actually did. Like, this is Laura Ingraham at her best, which is still very low. But she asked the follow-up question, and this is what he says.
Rudy, I couldn't agree with you more. But why are you the one to do this? Why isn't this the role of the Justice Department or the FBI? Why task you, the personal attorney, the president, to do that? I think that's a question that just layman was like, okay, I get it. That should be investigated. But why is Rudy running the show on that? Why isn't it FBI and main justice?
That's a very good question. Because the FBI's performance in this entire investigation, including up to this moment, is flawed. Why am I doing it, Laura? Can't you figure it out? I'm his defense lawyer. I'm defending him. He's my client. I don't know. Only Donald Trump is not entitled to a defense in America.
But how are you defending him by investigating Biden?
Another good question.
What is any? So first of all, hard-hitting questions from Laura Ingraham, considering it's Trump's personal lawyer. So why did they dispatch you? You can't figure it out? He doesn't get a defense lawyer? Wait, but you said it was like to fix corruption in a different country. How is that defensive? Because the FBI has done a bad job, the State Department turns to you, not to their diplomats who live in, have worked in Ukraine, speak Ukrainian or whatever.
And again,
Laura Ingraham was like the whole time, she's like, yeah,
they turn to you to defend the president. So, okay, so the State Department is in the business of defending the president with his personal attorney. I think that's what people were concerned about with Barr when he came in and he was trying to throw everything up, throw all the papers in the air when it came to the Mueller report. So you're continuing to confirm the corruption from within to without the entire administration, everyone he ever works with. Why would they do that? That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And look, I can assume that Rudy Giuliani was not happy with his performance at the beginning of Laura Ingraham's show, but I don't have to assume that because he then left the show. The show continued, other people were talking, and he felt the need to jump back in to deliver this sort of commentary.
Rudy, you've been listening to this conversation.
Yeah, I sure have, and I'd like to say to
Mr. Ahead to
I'd like
Chris
to say,
Hahn.
Mr. Hahn, I should sue you for libel because you irresponsibly said.
Oh, please.
Yeah, well, you actually usually say incredibly stupid things.
You're a public figure.
Yeah, and by the way, do you have any idea that the State Department?
So then you know the libel
okay,
law.
Hold on.
Shut up,
Rudy.
Moron.
Libel law.
Rudy.
Shut up.
Okay, hold on.
Shut up.
On,
you don't know
everybody.
What you're talking
Ooh.
About,
Chris.
You
Chris,
don't know
Chris.
What you're talking about, idiot.
I do.
That's the personal order of the president. He, in all likelihood, Rudy Giuliani is going to have to testify before Congress. There is no one in our country who is less equipped mentally, emotionally, anything than Rudy Giuliani to stand up to questions in congressional testimony.
Similarly, Candace Owens. But
yeah, that's true.
They're
too.
Both the two people that if you just let them keep talking, they'll bury themselves and their argument mm-hmm. all in the same sentence.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't wait. Honestly, I think Laura Ingraham was asking those questions because she wanted him to stop talking.
Yeah.
She's like, this is really bad. Let's try and get this lie to go a different direction.
Exactly.
This is not good.
Yeah, unfortunately, she did that too late. Don't let him come back on the show if you're trying to save him from going down for this. So he might be thrown under the bus by Trump. He might throw the State Department under the bus. God only knows. There's a lot of buses, a lot of people under them. That's the situation.
Good thing he came back to defend his argument by calling people morons and idiots.
Exactly.
And shut up.
Yeah. That's my favorite part. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back. We're going to turn to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, her multi-part poverty program after this. While Washington is perhaps understandably focused on Donald Trump's pending impeachment, all the details that are coming out, the work of Congress continues. And it continues with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who debuted her new multi-part poverty plan. Here she is talking about it.
America today is at its wealthiest point than in its entire history. And in fact, many would argue that today the United States represents one of the richest societies in global history. Except among all these record profits, 40 million Americans are living in poverty, and 18.5 million Americans are living in extreme poverty, which is measured as less than $2 a day. That's why I'm so excited to introduce a suite of legislation, including 5 bills and 1 resolution that begins to chip away at our issues of economic injustice. And we're calling it a just society.
There's of course more to the video. You can look it up now. This on Twitter was an exclusive that they had with Representative AOC. It is depressing to say this. This is the sort of policy suite that is perhaps, I think, objectively the most important thing that the government could be working on, and no one is going to care. Especially today, especially this week, but just in general. I mean, you talk about the concerns of working class Americans, poor Americans. Nobody cares, unfortunately.
As impeachment talk comes, and then Republicans and pundits will talk about all the things that Democrats are not doing. It's ironic that as things like this happen, first they ignore the things that many Democrats are doing, specifically AOC in this case. And also, they will talk about the things Democrats are doing, and they'll use this as a bludgeon against every other Democrat that's running. Oh, you guys are lying about AOC and her crazy policies, because they're not implementing any crazy policies. Yeah. Which one is it? Is it they're not implementing any policies, or that the policies are too crazy for you to handle? You don't want American people to really know what it is that they should receive.
Exactly. And look, when I say nobody cares, what I mean is the people whose job it is to report on this don't care, and they coincidentally also happen to be incredibly wealthy people. It's one of the reasons I've recently switched over to an idea I read about where you're supposed to, when you report on something, if you have a conflict of interest, you're supposed to talk about it. But if it's a conflict of economic interest for yourself, a policy that will affect you economically negatively, for some reason you don't have to talk about that. They should have to talk about that. They're millionaires. They should admit it when talking about taxes on the wealthy, for instance. So I do care about this. So let's jump into give you an idea of what this is about. The bills are packaged as a bundle called A Just Society. It would expand access to benefits by updating the federal poverty line to include expenses like childcare, internet access, and can be adjusted based on where someone lives. About 40 million Americans live in poverty. That should be a stat you hear every day, by the way. So 6 parts to this. We're gonna just quickly run through them to give you an idea of how all-encompassing this is. It's like something a presidential candidate would put out these days. Her Place to Prosper Act would try to help with the housing crisis by introducing a 3% national cap on annual rent increases, among other provisions. We saw something like this in Bernie Sanders' recent housing bill that came out. Individuals who have been convicted of a criminal offense would be ensured access to all federal public benefits in the Mercy and Reentry Act. And the Embrace Act would guarantee federal public benefits access to anyone, regardless of their immigration status. The Uplift Our Workers Act, meanwhile, would prompt the Department of Labor and the Office of Management and Budget to create a worker-friendly score for federal contractors. Incredibly important, considering that very often those federal contractors are raking in massive contracts, sometimes no bid, and often with very little regulation in terms of how the money is being spent, and as she's pointing out, how they're actually treating their workers. So that would be great to see. There's also, by the way, a resolution entitling A Just Society Guarantees the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights of All, that orders the Senate to ratify the UN Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. So look, this obviously needs to go hand in hand with other pieces of legislation. But this sort of thing, were this to be the priority of Congress, and you know, a Congress that could get something done, what could they do that would be more beneficial to more pieces than more people than something like this?
So since a lot of times things are attacked as saying that you're coming after Americans, 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 every time that a lot of times people who oppose actual American rights, just point out the things that are outlined in this type of policy. They're trying to protect against rent hikes that'll keep people from, allow people to actually stay in their homes. Workers' rights, things that work for people to have society, that society can work for them in general. Who are those people, what types of things that he's benefiting and who are they against? So the person who's fighting against it, look into who they are. Because every time a regular American fights against the things that are going on with billionaires continue to take money from everyone else, they're seen as just lazy and want to sit around and just take things that are entitlements.
Yeah.
What is it there's other people who are against real policy changes? Why are they against it? Look into them.
Yeah, and exactly.
Start going after them the way they go after regular Americans.
And look, I know the Grim Reaper in the Senate is, of course, never going to allow this to pass. This is just, you're just trying to give stuff to your voters or whatever. I know that you're gonna assume that it's undocumented immigrants or whatever. It's not. It's probably a lot of Democrats, sure, but there's a lot of red hats in that 40 million people. There are a lot of devoted Trump-trained conductors in those 40 million people that are going to respond positively if this sort of thing were talked about. That is how you win over people, not by pandering to them or ignoring things like racism, misogyny, and all of that, but by actually addressing the issues that affect not just Democrats, but all sorts of people, the working class across partisan lines. And so great job by AOC to keep pushing not just on accountability for the government, but amazing, bold, progressive proposals. If you're the right sort of progressive, you should be able to do both of those things, and it is your responsibility to do that, and she's doing a great job of it.
They can keep calling it socialism and keep saying it's anti-American, but then ask Americans, is this type of stuff anti-American to you?
Yeah, good point. We're gonna take a short break. We come back, new UN report on the state of our oceans. Spoiler alert, not good, after this. Yesterday afternoon, Trump was under a lot of pressure, potentially more pressure than ever before in his presidency. And so state TV jumps to the rescue. They've been training for this for a very long time, and they are in fighting shape to try to distract you into thinking that you're not seeing what you're actually seeing. So Fox News, obviously ground zero of state TV, all last night propaganda. To give you an idea of how intellectually honest what they're saying is, take a look at what came out this morning after the transcript was released.
The key thing from the initial reading of this transcript bill is that there are not multiple references, as widely reported, to the former vice president and his son. Based on our count, there's a key reference and then some follow-on references, so a handful, approximately three.
So there are not several, there's four, a handful. What is that? What, I mean, come on, like if you're a Fox viewer, you know that you're being lied to at that point. You don't think that four is several? You don't think, you think that a handful and several are somehow different in a way that matters for impeachment?
Or because several is too much for you, but four is just right.
Yeah.
There's four references, that's okay. If he had thrown in two more, we'd have a problem.
Yeah, by the way, she was less accurate because long ago I wanted to map out exactly how many number, what number goes to what word. Handful is definitely more than four. Handful is like 6 to 15, okay, depending on what you're talking about. So that's what they said.
I figure handful, I'm gonna go by each finger. So if hand is full, there's five.
You want at least five? Okay, well we almost got there. So look, that's Fox News. They're playing games with like terminology and stuff like that. But that does not mean that Fox was the only cowardly news outlet. I saw Chyron on MSNBC. The full Chyron, remember, we know what's in the transcript, we can already see it with our own eyes, was Trump, colon, no pressure put on Ukraine. Come on, you guys went to journalism school for how many years? And you're just like, you know what? I can't read this thing. I can't decide what's actually there. I can't trust my lying eyes. I'll just let the president talk directly to the people in a Chyron. You don't have to say Donald Trump, massive liar. I get that. You're not gonna do that.
You could.
But you could admit what's there. Clearly, there's references to not a quid pro quo, you're not gonna say that, but a favor that's desired, military hardware might be coming if they do these personal favors for him. You don't have to say that that's pressure, but you can't spread fake false talking points from the president but either.
They assume, that, I mean, they can hide behind the, well, Trump did say that, and we're just reporting what he said. And after we reported what he said.
It's not your job to report what he said.
Exactly.
Not if it's not true. Your job is much bigger and more important than that.
And then also the assumption is probably that our viewers, this is MSNBC, our viewers know that he's a pathological liar and everything he says is misleading. So we're gonna tell them what he said because, you know, he doesn't even know what he's saying. And by the way, the voices on whatever panel that was on were probably debunking all that stuff. But sometimes people just, we're a visual nature. We see it and that's what absorbed.
Yeah. Exactly. And so if we're cataloging profiles and cowardice, obviously we have to turn to Lindsey Graham at some point. So Lindsey Graham tweeted after seeing what was in that summary, "Wow, impeachment over this? What a nothing non quid pro quo burger. Democrats have lost their minds when it comes to President real Donald Trump." Someone did lose their minds over Donald Trump. It wasn't the Democrats, Lindsey. It was you. You were the one who said back on May 3rd, 2016, if we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it. You deserve it. You individually, not just the Republican Party, but no one has debased themselves in the same way that you have when it comes to Trump. Whatever respectability, integrity you once had, and there was very little to begin with, you threw it away over Donald Trump. This is a guy, by the way, Lindsey Graham, who not only voted to impeach Bill Clinton over lying about an affair, but said that all that would be needed to impeach Bill Clinton was if he interfered in the congressional investigation, because it is so sacred, the job of Congress to investigate a president. If you stand in the way of that, we can impeach you just for that. Is he asking for the whistleblower to come forward? After all, that's been blocked by Trump. That's stopping the investigation from going forward as of right now. Should we impeach him for that? Which Graham should we go by? 90s Graham, 2016 Graham, 2019 Graham? They're all loathsome. Which one are we supposed to trust?
There's no real way. And also, I'm sure he would. There's other things. What they blocked, the release of tax returns for Trump, many administration officials to testify about what was going on. Mm-hmm. It's consistent. There's been lots of blocking and stonewalling to investigations into the president. And apparently this is okay because it's his president and it helps push his political career.
If this is his defense, he should be really worried. You guys, you got to workshop this. You got to come up with something better than multiples versus handfuls and all of that stuff. I mean, MSNBC, CNN, they're gonna do a little bit of work covering for you because they don't want to be like pointing fingers or anything. But you need some better defense.
It's time to be a little impolite. Next time you talk to Lindsey Graham, any member of the media, just ask him, what were you thinking in 2016? Do you disagree with what you said back then? Let me quote you, since you said you're probably gonna say, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
So just give him quotes, ask him which Lindsey Graham he believes.
Yeah, exactly.
No one does that.
Sad, baby. That's all the time we have right now. We're gonna take a short break, come back, more to get to. I think we all get how important the oceans are. We all wanna protect them, not just, you know, libs like me, but the president of the United States himself, Donald Trump, has often said things like, I'm committed to keeping our air and water clean, but always remember that economic growth enhances environmental protection. So we need environmental protection, clean water. He respects the enormity of the issue, saying things like, on Puerto Rico, this is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water. It's both ocean and big, people. This is a big issue. And he also gets how politically important how we treat the ocean is. If we treat it wrong, it could hurt our political prospects as individuals. He once tweeted, today Barack Obama is standing in water in New Jersey. Remember on election day that he has put the US underwater. So he understands that sea level rise is a significant issue, and that is why he must be focused entirely today on this new UN report about the state of our oceans, because it paints a really dark picture. Dark big water, as he would say. Take a look at this first chart. It's gonna show you average sea surface temperature globally over time. You can see gradually rising from the 1940s up till today. Especially sharp rise in just the last couple of years, by the way. And like that's obviously a little bit hard to see, especially if you're on a phone. So ocean surface temperatures have been warming steadily since 1970. For the past 25 years, they've been warming twice as fast. So it's not just continuing, it is in fact accelerating. And what's really interesting is, it's not just that the oceans overall are getting warmer. We're now experiencing heat waves in the oceans. So we have an expert who said, it's sort of remarkable that prior to 2012 or 2013, nobody had thought about heat waves in the oceans. Subsequently, these kind of heat wave events have kind of popped up all over the ocean. We've actually had three major heat waves in the Gulf of Maine, 2012, 2016, 2018. And now we're looking at repeat heat waves in the Northern Pacific. Australia's had some repeat heat waves as well. This is horrible, obviously, for marine life. It's led to disastrous seasons for commercial fishermen, killing off the stock that they, of course, rely on. And it's not just heat. The report notes that the oceans are getting more acidic, which could lead to mass extinction of marine organisms, especially animals with shells such as oysters and clams. So like if you do a little bit of research on the percentage of the population that relies on fish for protein every day, we cannot afford to lose marine life. And that is on the chopping block if we don't do something serious about this. And so although I'm worried that many people will skip over this news today, the status of our ocean is incredibly important, and the UN doing a good job of making sure that we think about it.
Yeah, no, it's really easy to gloss over because none of those things have happened yet. So I mean, we still go through, as you hear about potential killing off of large portions of marine life, you go, well, they're still there, so who cares right now? Mm-hmm. And oh, you guys are just trying to scare me and make me think that. So why is it that you have to see it first before you can believe it? But at that point, when it comes to something like this, it's too late. And we've conditioned ourselves to go, well, you know what? I have to do too many things to change what we're doing. Actually, many people don't have too many things. You have to pressure your lawmakers to make sure we implement policies that pressure other people that are directly affecting this to make change. It's not that hard. You just have to think for yourself and stop allowing people to tell you that's just craziness. Those scientists are getting paid so much to say scientific things that are proven.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I worry that people won't pay attention. Greta Thunberg, she just came over the U.S. Over the ocean. The ocean that she crossed is already fundamentally different than it was 20 or 40 or certainly 100 years ago, and it's changing more. And in some ways, more consequential than a warming of the air. I mean, like, we can't live in the numbers that we are, humanity, if this continues. And unfortunately, as of right now, it's continuing. It's on us to do something about it, to stay focused on this sort of news, to get active. We've been profiling awesome environmental organizations this week that you can become a part of. Just, don't back off of this issue because the stakes couldn't be any higher. As always, J.R. Jackson, great to have you here.
Love it.
J.R. Wednesdays are my favorite kind of Wednesdays. We'll see you next Wednesday. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We've got more coming later this week. Interview with Tom Hartman. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.